Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. Callum Stoneman back with you again for another week to explore what's going on and what's new and what's trending in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. It's your show. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written emails are always welcome. Coming up this week, Jackie Brown has been hearing about the tactile transport maps making their way to the Canute console. We'll examine some of the new accessibility features you can find in iOS 26. And Hubert, along with guide dog Caesar, have been trying out the PitPat, the activity and health tracker for your dog. That's all coming up this week. Hubert Pavalkovich and Natalie Curran joining me this week. Welcome to both of you. Let's see what's going on with everyone this week. Natalie, I'll start with you this week.
Hiya. Yeah, I'm a bit annoyed. Jackie's stolen my thunder because I was interested in the tactile maps on the new display, but I'll let her cover it later. Before I go into what has caught my attention this week, we got an email in about how to uninstall and reinstall JAWS versions. And I think, Callum, you and I were having a bit of a chat about this a couple weeks ago when I explained how I'd uninstalled mine and I couldn't get the right version to be loaded in the first place. Apparently, the trick is to install the new version, close your laptop down, restart it, and then use Windows R to get to the run window, check you're running the right version, and then proceed to uninstall the old one. And that should stop any hiccups or problems happening. So that was a really helpful tip in from Steve.
Yeah, Steve not emailed that one in. Thanks, Steve. So that's basically the steps to do it properly, apparently. So install the new version of JAWS, reboot your laptop just to be sure that nothing weird is going on there, close down the old version when it opens up, do Windows R, JAWS 2025, or one word, or whatever year it is. So next year it'll be, or fairly soon actually, it'd be JAWS 2026 that you would type in, and then you can uninstall the old version. I didn't know you could launch it from the run dialog. Well, I knew you could because you can pretty much launch anything from that Windows R dialog, but I didn't know you could just type it in that way. So that's really, really useful. So yeah, cheers, Steve, for that one. Really helpful.
What's caught my attention this week is an announcement from Humanware that they've been working with Meta, and they've been working to create a suite of features. And the one that jumped out to me in particular was Follow Me. And there's a short demo video, and what it does is, using your glasses, you can say follow me or follow guide, and the person you are looking at, it will then sort of lock onto, and it means that they can walk in front of you and you can follow behind them, and you'll get audio updates saying guide is in view, or guide lost, and then you can move your head around until guide is found again. And in some ways it seems a little bit clunky. In other ways, I really like the concept because it means that when you are out and about and you have asked somebody for help, you don't necessarily need to take their arm or get a bit close if you're feeling maybe a little bit uncomfortable. So they might seem very helpful, but you'd rather keep a bit of distance for your own personal security. Or likewise, if it's a really busy area and actually it's just not practical to walk to a side, then you can walk behind them and not worry so much about losing them. And the other thing I really liked, as whilst I maybe couldn't see myself using them too often, was this is the first example, certainly that I've come across, of a kind of live video feed, insofar as you don't need to keep asking the glasses, is my guide there, is my guide there, is my guide there. It will update you once you've told it what you're looking for. And I thought that was quite a massive step, actually, in my opinion.
That is really cool. This is the bonus of that, because I'm guessing for that they're going to be using this development kit from Meta, where they can make use of the cameras and the microphones and stuff. And this is, that's genius, I think, that. So this is going to be available when this software development kit comes out, which I think is due to be early next year, or at least the early version of it is. So this, I'm really looking forward to trying this, actually.
And yeah, I think what's really good is the fact that this has come from Humanware first and then partnered up with Meta second. And what I mean by that is Humanware is a company who sort of exclusively work to design and create accessible products for visually impaired or hearing impaired or dual sensory loss individuals. Whereas Meta, as I think we've discussed before, created a cool pair of glasses, and then the accessibility community sort of knocked on the door and said, by the way, have you realised the potential power of what you've just created? And they did then jump on the bandwagon, but they did it the other way around. Whereas Humanware will have come to this from an accessibility point of view to begin with, which I think is also why I'm particularly excited by it.
Oh yeah, it's come from the experts, definitely. Yeah, this. The other thing that I love about this as well, I mean, yeah, you mentioned sometimes you're not comfortable taking someone's arm, but also the number of times I've asked someone, you know, can you just help me get to this place? Can you just, you know, can you just guide me to here? Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's this way. And then they just disappear. You know, so again, if you, as long as you can invoke it quickly, yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that. Hubert, anything new from you this week?
Pretty short from me, but Apple have been at it where they've released some new devices. And although I think it's only been via press release, it's nothing major because it's basically a few devices with the M5 chip. So new iPad Pro, new MacBook Pro, and the new Apple Vision Pro. Nothing too massively write home about, apart from everything's basically faster and better performance, which is great, I guess. The M5 chip has been rumoured for a while. Unsurprising, but nothing exactly explosive. I guess it's good to have, you know, fast and better performing devices, although the Apple Vision Pro is still extremely expensive.
Oof. Yeah. It's interesting, though, that there's updates for the Vision Pro. I mean, they've been rumoured for a long time, and I've not been convinced, to be honest. I feel like the Vision Pro is still very much like a proof of concept device, which I suppose it still is. But yeah, a new processor, they say it can kind of just, I don't know the exact wording that they used, but it basically can render visuals a lot faster and a lot clearer. But I don't know if it's, I mean, if you've got the original Vision Pro, I definitely don't think it's worth rushing out to buy this one.
I think the price tag does put me off getting it and trying it. I think it's still ridiculously expensive for the fact that, you know, I'd love to be able to see what it's like. I think it's, I'd like to at some point go to the Apple store and try it. But other than that, I just think it's not very competitively priced where there are other devices that can do something similar-ish that might be more affordable.
A quick one from me this week as well. Be My Eyes have been at it again and announced a few new partners this week. So a couple of big ones for the UK, BT and EE. They're two companies, but they're both kind of under the same banner, if you like, because EE is owned by BT. They've partnered up with them to get accessible customer service. The big one, though, is Tesco that they've partnered up with, which is one of our kind of supermarket chains here in the UK. So you can get help with their online services from their staff, but also help in store, which is very interesting. I honestly don't know the last time that I went to a supermarket, certainly not on my own, because it's just too much of a nightmare to find your way around. I mean, yeah, you can go up to customer service and say, you know, can you help me do my shopping? But I don't know, it just feels, I mean, first off, if you can find customer service in the first place nowadays, but also, I don't know, it just feels too awkward to me, that just too clunky. You've got to wait around or sometimes book in advance. So if you can just go into a shop and call up their staff on Be My Eyes, that's pretty appealing to me.
I think it's good to have that option as well, because some people love to go to the supermarket and get that physical experience. And I think if there's something to make that easier for people, then absolutely fantastic. For me, I just love the concept of online shopping. I just find it easier. But I think for me, it's always important that people have the choice and that also all the choices that they have are equally accessible to them one way or another. So I think having that that addition, that collaboration, that partnership is going to make that supermarket experience a little bit less stressful, because my problem with this is exactly you, as you said, where do you find customer service? It's never the easiest to find. Unless you know where it is, it's tricky.
It's funny you guys talk about customer service. I never go to customer service. I follow the sound of tills, like the sound of, you know, the cash registers opening and closing, and just go find a member of staff and say, hey, can somebody give me a hand? You know, if not you, one of your colleagues. But I like the idea of being able to do it in store more independently, because whilst I have to say, Callum, similarly, I haven't been inside a physical store shopping myself for a while. Apart from anything else, it's quite hard to carry things when you've got one hand holding a cane. Is the fact that actually sometimes, not often, but sometimes if you're getting a delivery, because somebody else is picking the stuff up for you, you don't necessarily get the nicest version of. So like I had a packet of apples delivered just last week and one of the apples fell apart in my hands. So it'd obviously been eaten through by something or other at some point. And I feel like if I'd been in the store myself, even, you know, with someone, they would have pointed that out to me and maybe picked up a different bag.
Plus, you have fun with substitutes as well when you do online shopping. We don't have strawberries, but we'll give you something similar. Here's some baby wipes.
Yeah. honestly. And also, remember, you can do this from the, using the Meta glasses as well. So if you can't ring the service directory directly from the glasses, but if you start the call from your phone, so go into the service directory, find Tesco, ring them up from your phone, and then double tap the camera button on your glasses. That does work, and that does switch the video call over to the glasses. I don't think many people realise that, but you can do it that way as well, and then use your glasses to go around.
That's a really good tip, Callum. I might give that a go, because actually I'm still having problems with my glasses disconnecting from my phone whenever I am on a call. So the complete opposite of what anybody would want. So I might try that and see if that actually reconnects it.
Well, there you go. Have you tried this out? Have you been in store and got assistance virtually from Be My Eyes or even Ira? And how's that gone? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Stick with us for another week. This is Tech Talk.
So with me today is Ed Rogers of Bristol Rail Technology. Hi, Ed.
Hello, Jackie.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Would you like a bit of an update about the Canute console and the Canute 360? Where are we at with that just at the moment?
Well, the reason we've been talking to people recently about the Canute console in particular is because we have released a new application for it. We release applications for this quite frequently, but the Canute console now is a particular application which we have been requesting people test. And you don't necessarily have to have a console to start the testing to do this, and that is a transport mapping application. This takes data from OpenStreetMaps, which is like Google Maps. You type in an address, and then it generates you. You type in an address, and then it'll give you the street node. And you select which form of transport you want, whether those are buses, trains, trams, ferries, all sorts. And it will then list all the different routes it finds going from that address. And it will draw you a tactile diagram of the connection between all the stops emanating out from that spot. And you can then export that as a BRF. And that, of course, you can emboss to paper and share with others. And we are also asking some people who don't have a Canute console to get in contact with us if they're interested in testing that, because we want to get people's impressions from a much wider group of people, those who are prepared to receive a BRF or receive paper braille. But it started out as an application on the Canute console, which I appreciate, and you probably ought to describe in a little more detail.
Yeah, if we could go back just a little bit to the Canute console for new listeners who are thinking, what on earth is the Canute console and the Canute 360? So can you just describe it a little bit for us?
The starting point for understanding both of these is that these are unique forms of Braille display technology unused in the single line displays or in any other multi-line display, which allows us to have a 40 cells by 9 line display space at approximately the price that you get a single line Braille display for. And we have two models. The Canute 360 is the one which was released at the end of 2019, and that was the first commercial consumer product that was a multi-line Braille display, and that had the 40 cells by 9 lines. It was designed for reading ebooks. So that's a bit of a description for people. This was about 14 inches left to right, about 7 inches deep front to back, and about an inch and a half thick. This is a desktop device, and you put an SD card, like the library card from the RNIB, onto this, and then you could read through those files, and it's 40 cells wide so that it would show the full page without any jagged line wrapping, without spoiling the layout, which you get when you go under 40 cells. And it's 9 lines because that breaks up a 27-line document very nicely into 3. That was the Canute 360, and we're still selling those. We have a sister product of that called the Canute console, which takes that same display, but it mounts it into a workstation, meaning the display is raised somewhat, and it has a pull-out tray underneath of the QWERTY keyboard, and it has a flip-up 14-inch monitor, the monitor being synchronized to the Braille display. And this, rather than being a device for reading BRS, although it can still do all of that, is for interactive applications to really supercharge someone's career path or educational path by making access to tables, to diagrams, to charts, and so on, much more accessible. So we're concentrating on all the sorts of things which are about increasing the speed at which someone can understand and appreciate data. That's what the Canute console is doing, with the same basic hardware as the Canute 360. I should perhaps preempt a question about why has it got a visual monitor on there? Well, it's useful, of course, to be able to share what you're doing with sighted colleagues. But the unique thing about this is the monitor is synchronized to the Braille display with exactly the same information. So it has 40 characters wide and only has 9 lines, meaning that as a sighted person, you can, within a 16th of an inch, it is exactly lined up. You can point to something on a Braille display and know exactly what that is without immediate understanding Braille. And as a Braille reader, you can create something visually and know that it's laid out precisely as you want it to be visually. And that goes for text documents and diagrams and everything else.
And this, of course, has led to other applications for the console as well. So can you tell us about some of those, as well as the travel maps?
Yeah, the travel maps was just the latest, and that was kindly sponsored by the National Centre for Accessible Transport. But that was built on the back of a lot of other applications, which were primarily sponsored, in a sense, by the actual individuals who bought into the console. Because everyone that bought into the console in the early days, and anyone who subsequently bought our premium package, we build an application to them based off what they want. And that's where all these applications have come from. So those have included spreadsheet applications, where someone gets a resizable table. You look at an Excel file or a CSV file, that's a common format for sharing spreadsheets. You look at your Excel file, and then it will be reformatted on the fly as you move around it in order to maximize the amount of data on screen. But it's about showing columns of data. That, along with diagrams, is very powerful. But we also have a charts application that was prompted by someone asking us to be able to see live updates to stock data in order so that they could trade in day shares. And there's lots of complex things to compare different stocks and how they are rising and falling. We, of course, have all the normal range of word processing, be able to look to create Word documents and so on. But fundamentally, a lot of this comes down to computer science and to system administration, because that's where the real strength of this lies, is in data manipulation. So it's great for programming, and a lot of these applications have been built with or by the people that bought them, because it's so easy to throw together an application for example, looking at maps of the solar system, or a top-down view of match replay using data taken from videos on the web that would bring you a football match being replayed live as a top-down view. There's a couple of examples. The real point is, though, if there's a kind of data which has some spatial value to the data, you can probably represent it on the Knute console using the pre-existing library of functions.
So am I right in saying that the console is open source? It's Linux? Is that yes. Yeah.
Yes, the operating system is a Linux. It's Debian-based. You can install anything you want on there. Because of the way we've set it up, it's using a screen reader called BRLTTY natively on the Knute console. That means that you're in the command line, and anything that runs in the command line and works visually will work in Braille, which is very, very powerful. Some of the applications that we've got running on there are really just something which just runs out of the box. And our applications are all open sourced as well, and you can download them, and they're all written in Python or Bash, and we encourage people to build their own. Not everyone wants to, but it's quite nice to know that you could just commission someone to build you something if you needed to in future.
So where do you see Knute console going in the future? Have you got anything exciting on the horizon? I agree that the travel maps is phenomenal. But I wonder if you have anything else in the pipeline, or is it dependent mainly on those people that buy them and want them to do, as you say, graphs and maybe spreadsheets, or, you know, work with data?
It will make a big difference which people continue to buy them, because if someone comes along to us and says, I really want this application, it will make the difference between me taking up this job or not. And we will build that. That's how we have continued to work all the way from when we were founded in 2011. We've always prototyped in live, in real time, with our community of people who are interested in the development. Just a brief aside, we manufacture this in the United Kingdom. We're based in Bristol. We build it here in our workshop, and that's no mean feat when the price is approximately 1/10 of what you would pay per cell for other Braille devices, or 1/5 in the case of other multi-line devices. The future, putting aside what people encourage us to do, I expect to be based very much around making a greater use of those tables, charts, and those diagrams. So there's so many different uses to put to what has started life as a transport diagram. But you can, and we are going to use it for doing things like UI. There are applications out there where there are a lot of blind people working in or with design teams, and the UI files they're given are quite inaccessible. That was useful. Flow diagrams, very easy to represent them using the same diagram software. SVGs and other CAD packages are something we are working on, and we're working on with the Klovenik Center in Ohio in order to bring CAD packages like Gerber files and 3D modeling.
So is Knute drawing worldwide appeal now? Because, you know, so far it's a fantastic product and, you know, a brilliant venture that you have brought to fruition. But is it across the world now, would you say, in other countries? Is it catching on?
Yeah, only a minority of our sales are in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
The majority have been abroad. A lot have been to North America, but we've also had sales, I think, into every continent, multiple times over. We've had the majority of those, of course, have been the Canute 360 so far, because the Canute console, so we've been rolling out slowly. And almost every single device has had some sort of customization done to it, which has just been an amazing pleasure to find out what people want to use this for. But I do want to say, is anyone out there that's got a Canute 360, you can upgrade to a console. We have various different hardware upgrades packages for that, and we will continue to maintain that. You can upgrade whenever you want to with the same display. So you can use your display and add on the workstation.
What about cost? What does it cost for a Canute 360, and then the console if you wanted to add that on, or if you already have a Canute 360?
The Canute 360 its retail price from us directly is £2,500. Okay. The if you want to upgrade your Canute 360 to a console, that's about £1,600. And the full console for a new buyer is just under £4,000. So that's £4,000 for a console, £2,500 for a Canute 360. We also have a premium package which comes with double the warranty, a more secure case, and most importantly, us building a custom application for you. And that's an extra £1,000 on top.
Do you anticipate using Windows in the future, or going down the road of having some kind of screen reader application for, you know, say, for example, NVDA or JAWS? Or are you just staying with what you have at the moment because of its success?
Well, this is something that's very important to us and our UK distributor, Sight & Sound. I should note those prices I gave are for Sight & Sound, as well as for Bristol Braille, and anyone listening abroad, if you go to our website, you'll see the various distributors on there for covering different territories. To answer your question, I would love to have full support from every different screen reader. We have support for BRLTTY, and that works on Windows, Linux, and wherever you can get BRLTTY running. But that is from the command line. The way of getting NVDA support and Narrator support will be to make them support multi-line, first of all. And once they support multi-line, it will already work with the Canute because of the BRLTTY driver. We would be very interested in speaking to JAWS to get support for the Canute on that. But our initial focus has been on BRLTTY, and it's worked really nicely so far. So we will next be looking at NVDA and hoping to get a beta release of a driver out as soon as possible.
That really will be something very exciting to see when you reach that stage. Ed, thank you very much for joining us on Tech Talk today. That's really interesting, and particularly the new travel maps. We look forward to hearing more about that in the future. Thank you.
As you've probably heard us talk about on the show by now, iOS 26 is now available, bringing with it a number of new features, both mainstream and accessibility. And there's quite a lot in there for us voiceover users. And I want to just take you through a few of these over the next couple of weeks. The first one that I want to talk about this week is a feature called Copied Speech. Now, this didn't get much of a splash, if you like, when it came to all the accessibility announcements. I don't think this was even mentioned, really. But I think this is a fantastic feature. Very, very underrated, if you ask me. So what this allows you to do is it's been a feature for a long time where you can copy the last thing that VoiceOver said to your phone's clipboard. So I believe by default that is a three-finger quadruple tap. So you tap four times on the screen with three fingers At least that's what it is for me, and I'm pretty sure that is the default. And that works, so the last thing that VoiceOver said, it will copy it to your clipboard and you can paste that in or whatever you want to do with it. But what this does is gives you a history of those items that you've copied, because before you could copy one thing and then if you scrolled a bit and then did that gesture again to copy something that VoiceOver said, it would just wipe out the last thing that was previously on the clipboard. So kind of how the traditional clipboard works, really. It's just one thing at a time that's on there. Whereas with this, think of it as almost like a clipboard history, essentially. So you can copy multiple bits of information and then scroll through them and access them and paste them in wherever you want to paste them. So I'll show you how this works. This use case that I'm going to give you is not the best example in terms of a practical use case, but it should give you an idea of how it works, and then I'll talk through a couple of ways that I found it genuinely useful. So one of the things that I like to do to try and find out what's trending in the tech news when I'm preparing for the show, because believe it or not, I do prepare for this thing sometimes, I like to have a scroll through Apple Viz, which is what we've mentioned before. It's one of the big kind of Apple discussion sites, and there's always something interesting going on the forums there, or there might be news of a new iOS release, or now that they've expanded it, there might be other news related to assistive technology more generally that ends up there. So I like to have a scroll through there. I find that quite a good source. So let's just say for this example that I want to have a flick through and make a note of articles or forum posts that I'm interested in and that I want to come back to later. And I'm going to make a note of those article headlines. So the way you would do this, let's say I first want to start off with the date, which is on my lock screen. So I'm going to grab my phone.
14:07.
So I'm going to do a flick to the left to get the date.
Wednesday, the 15th of October.
Okay, 15th of October. So I'm now going to do that three-finger quadruple tap. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wednesday, the 15th of October, copied to clipboard.
Okay, so that's copied the date. I'm now going to unlock my phone.
14:08. Address, skip to main content, in page link.
And now I've already got it prepared and ready, so I'm on Safari with the Apple Viz website open. So I'm just going to navigate by headings for a bit and scroll through a few of these.
Welcome to Apple. Getting started. Latest Apple. Advanced iPhone camera means better video recognition. Heading level 3. Link.
Okay, that one sounds interesting. So again, I'm going to do that three-finger quadruple tap.
Advanced iPhone camera means better video recognition. Copied to clipboard.
So it's copied that one. Let's carry on scrolling through.
iOS 26.1 beta 3 has released. Heading level. A petition asking Apple to consider discounts for people with disabilities. Heading level 3. Google One price increase. Heading level 3. Link.
Okay, Google One price increase. Sounds interesting. So again, that gesture to copy that to the clipboard.
Google One price increase copied to clipboard. Bridging access to Braille. An in-depth look at Braille access on iOS 26. Heading level 3. Link.
Another one that I'm interested in, so let's copy that.
Bridging access to Braille. An in-depth look at Braille access on iOS.
I'll just stop that there because it's a bit of a long one. I think we've got enough there to be going on with. We've got 4 articles, I think that was. So now I'm going to come out of this and go into the Notes app.
Home, Safari, Notes. Notes, Folders, Back button.
And I'm going to go to the bottom to create a new note.
New note, button. New note, note. Text field is editing. Insertion point at start.
So now we're in a text field. And obviously I'm doing this in Notes, but you could do this on any text field that you want, really. Now this option for copied speech is in the rotor. So if I was to just do a standard paste, it would paste in the last thing that VoiceOver said, which I think, if I remember rightly, was that bridging access to Braille, an in-depth look at Braille access. So it would paste that. But I'm going to do the rotor gesture and go over to copied speech.
Misspelt words, edit. Copied speech, bridging access to Braille, an in-depth look at Braille access.
So there's copied speech, and you hear the last thing that was copied. So what I can do now is do a one-finger flick up or down. So I'm going to do a one finger swipe down, and you will hear a list of all the things that have been copied to the clipboard so far. So I'm going to do that now. Do a one finger flick down.
Google One price increase.
There's one of them. Flick down again.
Advanced iPhone camera means better VO recognition.
Down again.
Wednesday the 15th of October.
And that's the date that we copied first.
Clear all copied speech.
And then you can clear that. So you can, if you wanted to clear everything off there, you can clear it that way. So the date was the first one, or it was one before the clear. So I'm just going to do a flick up.
Wednesday the 15th of October.
And now I'm going to double tap.
Wednesday the 15th of October.
And it's not been very clear there, but I think it should have pasted it into the text field. So
format note, text field is editing. Wednesday the 15th of October. Insertion point attend.
There you go. Let's put that in.
Return.
So just to keep it clean, I'll do a new line.
Return.
And then we go back over to copied speech.
Misspelt word edit. Copied speech. Bridging access to Braille. An in-depth look at Braille access on iOS 26.
Okay, and we can scroll through these. The date that we copied first is still there.
Clear all copy. Wednesday the 15th of October.
So that's still there. I'm going through them the other way this time, so I'll do a one-finger flick up.
Advanced iPhone camera means better VO recognition.
So let's double tap that one to paste it in.
Advanced iPhone camera means better VO recognition.
So that's pasted that in. Again, I've just done a new line. So back over to copied speech.
Misspelt edit. Copied speech. Bridging access to Braille. An in-depth look at Braille access on iOS 26. Google One price increase.
So again, I could double tap that to paste it in. Or I could double tap the bridging access to Braille. And just because we can, let's say we wanted to delete all of these. I'll go up to the cleared copied speech option.
Bridging at clear all copied speech.
And double tap.
Cleared copied speech.
And it tells you that it's been cleared. And if I was to go back to copied speech in the rotor now, the option does show up, but the only option there would be to clear all copied speech. So this is the way I found this really useful, because the example that I've given you there is, it's a little bit clunky, to be honest. This isn't really, I mean, you could do it this way if you wanted. This isn't the way that I would usually take notes. Obviously, the way I would normally do it is to put links in to the articles, but, you know, hopefully that gives you an idea of how it actually works. And one of the things that happened to me the other day where this came in really useful was I had to make a payment to somebody, a bank transfer, and they sent me their account details. So the name on the account, but the two biggest things were the account number and the sort code. Now, usually what I do there is I will get the account number, get VoiceOver to read that, and then copy it, and then go into my banking app and then paste it in. And then I would have to go back to messages or emails or whatever it was to then copy over the sort code, again using VoiceOver just because it's easy, and then go back to my banking app and paste that in. But you've got to be careful, because if you're outside of the banking app, or at least mine, if you're outside of the app for any more than, I think it's 30 seconds or a minute, it logs you out for security, but then that of course means you've got to start again. So what I was able to do here was copy the account number, copy the sort code, both in one go, and then go into my banking app, go to copied speech. I could find, firstly, the account number, double tap, paste that in, move over to the sort code field, find the sort code, again in copied speech, paste that in, job done. It just made it really, really nice, really easy. So you could do that with pretty much anything, really, be it bank account details, phone numbers, anything really where you want to take down multiple bits of information quickly and get them copied and pasted somewhere. It's worth saying that this only works with the VoiceOver copy gesture. So if you go to a text field and you do, say, select all and then copy, or you copy something using the copy option in the rotor. So you know how you can go to edit and there's an option there that says copy. That will not appear in copied speech. So it's not grabbing it from the system. It's grabbing it from VoiceOver directly. So it will only work if you do that gesture to copy the last spoken phrase. But even still, I think this is a really useful feature. I think this might just be my favourite new feature in iOS 26.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Let's have a look at the inbox then and see what's going on. We've had an email in from David who says, I have an iPhone SE second generation, which I believe was released in around 2020. I'm running the latest version of iOS 18, and it doesn't look like this phone will be able to run iOS 26. I'm aware of many of iOS 26's new features, but I'm quite content with the phone I have. And he's asking, if I stay on iOS 18, will I be prone to the same security vulnerabilities as I would from sticking with Windows 10 instead of Windows 11? Will Apple continue to support and update iOS 18? So a couple of things with this. I think the first thing to mention is that according to Apple's website, at least, the second generation iPhone SE should be able to run iOS 26. So it might be worth checking your settings on that one. If you go to Settings, General, Software Update, what I've found with these major releases, sometimes it says your iPhone is up to date, but then underneath that, it will say also available iOS 26, and then you can install it from there. So that might be worth a check. But in terms of security, I've got a couple of thoughts on this, but I'll let one of you two go first because I ramble enough on this thing.
Well, the only thought I had was I also have an iPhone SE from 2020, so I think that's second generation as well, for work purposes, and work are really tight on security. You know, we'll get notifications if our software isn't up to date. And I'm on 18.5 and I've had no such warnings. So I'm inclined to think that actually you are probably okay and that most of the updates that have happened since 18 are probably more enhancements as opposed to security concerns. So, I mean, if you can update, like Callum just said, then brilliant. But I wouldn't personally overstress it.
To your question about Windows, iOS and Windows are pretty different beasts when it comes to security. Windows generally is a bit more open, or quite a lot more open, in terms of what apps can do and what can be installed and how those things can run. iOS is very locked down. So for example, if you've got an app on iOS, chances are it can do what it needs to do, but it can't really talk to anything else or go off and start, you know, doing things randomly. They're very, what they call sandboxed, which basically means it's just locked in its own little bit and it can do what it needs to do and nothing more. So as long as you're not going on any websites that, you know, might be dodgy or downloading things, you know, clicking on random links, the usual sort of advice, as long as you're not doing that, you should be fine. I mean, obviously it's always good to be as up to date as you can, as we've said, but I wouldn't lose sleep over it. And usually if there is a really major vulnerability, so they're not going to, generally speaking, no, they're not going to release any more updates for iOS 18. But if it was to come out that something was really critical and really needed fixing, they will sometimes do a kind of out of scope release just to close whatever hole is open. So yeah, try and update if you can, but short answer is you'll probably be fine, to be honest. You've got nothing to worry about there. And finally, for now, we've had an email in from Padma, who's got a bit of an interesting one. She says, I have an iPhone 13, and when I charge it and take it off the charger, it tells me that the charge is 100%. But sometimes when I take it off, it will stop speaking. There will be no speech. And all the usual steps of the three-finger double tap to toggle speech, turning the phone on and off, those sorts of steps don't seem to bring it back. But then later on, when I go to check it, it will miraculously start speaking again. This happens about once a month, and it's quite worrying because I don't have a landline, I only have the iPhone. And typically, there's no expert around when this starts happening. She says she has taken it to the Apple store and they couldn't figure out what was going on. Just wondering if any listeners have had the same problem and can suggest any solutions. Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'd say it's a very odd situation. But I did wonder if Pasma might be having a problem with software updates, ironically enough. Because I haven't had it happen for a long time. But I do remember with some of the earlier updates, when you did them, VoiceOver didn't necessarily automatically come on. Certainly with some of the bigger ones, I had to get somebody else to go into settings again and switch those settings back on. And I'm wondering if Pamela might have automatic updates on. So when she's plugging her phone into charge overnight, it's doing the updates at sort of 3-4 in the morning. And then she goes to pick her phone up sort of properly, the VoiceOver hasn't turned itself back on again. So that's what I think might be causing the issue. With regards to fixing it, my suggestions are check that you haven't got automatic updates on so that you can control when you turn them on and off and you're prepared for it. And the other thing I thought you might not have tried is if you've got Siri on, so, or if you don't have Siri on, turn it on. And that might be another way. So if you pick up your phone in the morning and it's not talking to you, you could try, "Hey Siri, turn VoiceOver on." And that might be another way of getting it to kick back in again. But yeah, that's my first port of call, is check your update settings. Have you got it automatically on? In which case, that might be what's causing you the problem.
Yeah, that sounds likely, to be honest, with the automatic updates. Another thing you can do, I know you mentioned you tried rebooting the phone, but again, if you've got Siri on, you can reboot your device using Siri. So if you hold down the button and just say, "Restart this device," it will ask you to confirm. It will say, "Are you sure you want to restart your device?" And then say yes. That will reboot the phone and make sure that it's been rebooted properly as well. So so that may help. So a couple of suggestions there. I hope that helps, Padma. Let us know how you get on. If you've got any answers to that one, or if you've got any other comments or tips or anything that you want to send in, please do techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Recently, during our Tech Radar feature that we do at the beginning of every episode, I've mentioned that I've purchased a young Caesar the guide dog a little gift. Not sure if it's one he requested, mind you, but it's one I found fascinating, certainly. I'm talking of the PitPat, the fitness tracker for dogs. Yes, indeed, they exist. And as soon as I've discovered it, I thought, why not? Because, you know, it would be quite interesting to see, you know, what happens and how much work my yellow pocket rocket actually does. And today I will show you briefly how it works, and we will take a look at the PitPat app, mainly because accessibility, although it's there, it isn't exactly perfect, shall we say. But I'll show you what things are fairly easy to do in the app, and the things you can enjoy, and hopefully this app can be made more accessible in the future. Right, so there are two variations of PitPat. That's the two main things you need to know. First one, it's a very basic one which just has the fitness tracking and nothing else. So it will count calorie burn, distance, exercise minutes, that sort of thing. The second one is one with a GPS tracker also included. It's worth keeping in mind that there's a difference of £100 pricing between the two. The general standard PitPat costs about £50, whereas other GPS PitPat is £150. So it all depends as to which one you want. Because young Caesar has an AirTag, I thought a GPS PitPat is unnecessary. So that's the first thing to note there with this one. So what does the PitPat look like? The basic PitPat device is quite small. It's a teeny tiny little box, much smaller than an engagement ring. I'm probably thinking of, if you've ever bought a set of bone conduction headphones, they often put two kind of foamy memory foam earplugs and they put them in that little tiny plasticky box. The PitPat is probably a little bit bigger than that. That's the only object I can think of really to compare it to. However, simple is that little box with a little battery compartment, which from my experience, if you need to change the battery, which you will have to after about a year, it's one of these kind of rounded flat batteries that goes in watches and liquid level indicators. You might want sighted assistance for that because it isn't the easiest to take out. So it's got that battery compartment. It's got a button on top of the little box, which is in the shape of a dog's paw, which is fantastic. And it's got a Velcro coming out of either side of it, which you basically put around your canine's collar. And it's that simple. You put it on the collar, and there it is. That's the easy part. And you just leave it on the collar, or if you use two different collars like I do for free running and basic, his basic collar, you need to then change it from collar to collar. But it's not too bad. So setting it up, it's easiness varies because I kind of set it up without fully knowing how I did it, mainly because the PitPat app in certain areas uses a screen, needs to be used with screen recognition and sometimes without. So I did manage to set it up, but it was a bit tricky at first because it was a struggle to find the right option. And in the end, the only thing that made the option to find my particular PitPat without GPS visible was the use of screen recognition. What I'm going to show you now is the PitPat app, and we are actually going to log some of Caesar's activity, or I'll tell you how to refresh that. And we'll take a look at a few different screens and tell you what happens in there.
PitPat. Stopping braille screen input. Opening PitPat. PitPat. Menu.
Right, so we are in the PitPat app, and we will go through a little bit of what it looks like. So you've got the menu screen there, function that you can go to.
It's been over 2 days since you last fetched data from Caesar. It's a good idea to fetch as often as you can. Okay, fetch now. Button.
So it's telling me that I've not fetched data for a while. Now, the way you fetch data is you simply press the fetch button on, yes, I know, fetch. You press the fetch button on the app, and then you have to press the PitPat button on the device on the Caesar's collar in order for it to happen. So it says fetch now, let's do it straight away.
Okay, fetch now. PitPat, please wait. Searching.
Okay, so it's searching for the PitPat. I'm going to now press the button on the PitPat once. There we go. I've gotten access to it while Caesar's curled up. So it's now going to refresh the data. I usually press it every day a few times after each walk to refresh it. The last few days have been a bit busy, so although he's been walking plenty, I've not done it.
Caesar.
So you've got Caesar here.
Summary.
So there's the summary screen. This summary screen will give you various stats for each day and things like that. The reason I'm not going to go through that screen in that much detail is because the accessibility on that screen is particularly tricky. By tricky, I mean you get a lot of numbers and not always is it possible to figure out which number corresponds to, well, to what, really. You don't know which number is minutes done pottering, minutes done resting, or that sort of thing. I find that quite tricky on that summary screen. So that particular screen, I don't use that much. The only thing I can sort of understand is how much calories he's burnt. And miles, because that's towards the bottom of the screen and the label for each of the units is listed after the actual number, which is not the consistent case throughout that summary screen.
Activity.
Activity. This is the screen we will show you.
Activity.
Let's take a look.
Location. Foo. Weight. Back. Inch. Life track. Fetch new data. Button.
So fetch new data is the first button you get. We've already done it, so there's no need to, but this is where you need to go. If you want to fetch new data, you'll press that button and you'll press the button on Caesar's PitPat or, well, your beloved K9's PitPat, and it will fetch the data.
So far this month, 15. Today.
So he's done 15 minutes of exercise today.
50. Yesterday.
50 minutes yesterday.
65. Monday.
65 minutes on Monday, and so on and so forth.
7. Sunday. 45. Saturday.
It will take you through most days of the week for each month and show you the exercise minutes. So yeah, 15 today, not a large amount. Usually by now he's done 30 or 20, so will be needing a bit of a bigger walk, but he tends to get 60 minutes most days, apart from a weekend where sometimes he might get 45, but it does truly vary. But never below 40 minutes. It's always above 40. That's my kind of current target for him, but you can increase the exercise goal if you wish. Equally, you can decrease it. When you set up your pit pat, you actually put information about your dog, including breed and weight and stuff like that, and it will actually suggest an exercise goal for you, which is based on that sort of information. You can either agree with it and keep it, or you can change it. Next section of the app is
location.
Location, this is irrelevant if you have the basic pit pat, which I have. If you've got the GPS one, then this will show you location details, so we will have to skip that.
Food.
Now, this is the interesting part. So you can actually put what food your dog has, including the various details, if by scanning a barcode or inputting the information manually. And it would then, based on your dog's information, recommend the desired amount that your dog should be having of said food. Now, if you have a pet dog, that's fair enough. If you have a guide dog, you're kind of told how much food your dog needs to have. So you may probably not need this part as much, but it's cool that it does it.
Weight.
Your dog's weight. Fairly self-explanatory, really. You can update your dog's weight. There's a little function then that also gives you a step-by-step guide as to how to check various aspects of your dog's weight by asking you a few questions. And based on your answers, it will say whether your dog is underweight and you might need to keep an eye on it, or whether your dog's kind of the right weight, or whether your dog's a bit overweight. It's not like the most accurate, but it takes you step by step and tells you what to look out for.
Badges.
Here we go. This is my favorite part, or certainly one of them.
Badges.
So you can earn badges, and the badges refer to exercise goals and the days you've completed it, and distance badge.
Inch life, 13 more days to go.
So 13 more days to go to achieve the next streak for the goal completed.
18 miles to go.
18 miles to go is the distance badge. So how does the distance badge work? This is the fun part because it's actually quite creative. So this is where, since I've joined PitPat, Caesar has achieved different distance milestones. So I think, you know, the first one was, since Caesar joined PitPat, he walked the length of Oxford Street. I think the next one was, you know, since Caesar joined PitPat, he walked at the distance equivalent of Snowdon and back down. So that sort of thing. So it's calculating the distance since your pit pad was installed. And that distance gets obviously bigger and bigger, that distance total. And therefore, you get bigger equivalents of how much Caesar has walked in my case. So, for example, the most recent badge I achieved was it stated that since Caesar joined pit pad, he walked the equivalent of one lap of Loch Ness. And we are 18 miles away from a next badge, which I'm looking forward to.
The 12th of October, 2025.
So if I tap on this particular date here.
The 12th of October, 2025.
You've got the 12th of October and the 11th of October. These are the last dates that badges were achieved. Now, it just tells you the date. It doesn't tell you which badge you have achieved. But in order to get that information, you just have to tap on that date. Because it only will list the dates on which your dog has achieved a badge.
Insurance.
This is kind of, you can get pet insurance through this app, something like that. I've never tried this particular part because I've mainly bought his pit pad for kind of curiosity purposes and a bit of basic fitness tracking.
Life trademark.
Not sure what this exactly is. I think this is a subscription possible. Again, I've not really looked into it much on a pure basis that for me personally, for my use case, it's not something I use often.
13 more days to go.
And we're back to the badges. So, in basics, that's the PitPat app. The two main functions I use are the activity and the badges, because the summary screen is not as accessible as I'd like it to be, because you can't always tell, as I mentioned, which number corresponds to what exactly it means. So I'll show you what I get here, actually, and you'll see what I mean.
Inch bad weight food look act sub Caesar summary. Summary.
So we'll tap on summary and let me show you what you get.
At look food weight badge insurer life. Welcome to your dog's life. Total distance 111 miles.
So he's walked 111 miles as he joined PitPat. So, yeah, not too bad, considering we're recording this on the 15th of October, and he's had this PitPat installed since the 26th of September.
Best day. Average day. In the last 7 days. Monday the 13th of October, 2025. 65. Running. Playing. 0.
So as you can tell...
5. 40. 70. 4.8. 18.1. Hours. Mince. Hours. Pottering. Resting. 0. 3. 6. 9. 12.
There's a lot of numbers here, and it's rather unclear as to which number contributes to what. Which is a bit of a shame, because I would like to be able to tell that. But yeah, I've not found a way to do it yet. But I'm hoping that if I can contact the developers of PitPat, we can hopefully get this app made a little bit more accessible, because I think it would be fantastic to be able to actually tell what these numbers mean, because it adds more to the app and the more you can get out of it.
15, 18, 21, 24, 1014.
So I know this is the calorie number that he's burnt today so far, which is quite a lot.
5.7.
And then 5.7, and these numbers correspond to...
Kilocalories.
Kilocalories.
Miles.
And miles.
Selected.
So that's the summary screen. As I've said, not the most accessible, but certain things you can probably tell from it, even if it's not... Well, even if it's not much, but yeah, it's one of these things. Right, let me show you the tabs.
Selected, my dog, tab, 1 of 2, the pack, tab, 2 of 2.
Let's show you this.
Selected, the pack, tab, 2 of 2.
There's a bit of a social element here. So this is where you can get some more statistics for Caesar and the leaderboard.
Leaderboards. Welcome to our world of dogs. Newest dogs.
So you can actually see people's dogs that have been added. You don't get much details. You only get their name and breed, so no kind of private details as such are released.
Pumpkin. Jack Russell Terrier.
A doggy pumpkin.
Joined 3 minutes ago. Most popular names. Luna. 1.3%. Bella. 1.0%. Poppy. 0.9%.
So there we go. You've got a few different things like that.
Leaderboards. Leaderboards.
I love a leaderboard.
Current goal streak. What's this? Button 1. Bow. 20 days.
So we've got someone who's achieved their goal for 20 days.
1. Iggy. 20 days.
Another 20-dayer dog.
3. Franco. 19 days.
19 days.
3. Rivers. 19 days. 3. Cindy. 19 days. 23. Cesar. 17 days.
Caesar is currently 23rd on the leaderboard, but let me tell you, he's achieved his goal every day since he's had his PitPat, so I've got a strong feeling we will be top of that leaderboard very soon.
Tilda, 1 day, 1,000, my dog, 1,639 dogs.
So there's 1,600 plus dogs on this leaderboard, which is quite exciting. And that, in short, is PitPat. Quite a simple device to set up, might require a bit of screen recognition, a bit of fiddling to connect it in the first place, I found. But it does work. You just have to try a bit. And a bit of trial and error, I think, works, because I genuinely can't remember how I actually found the way to connect the PitPat. I was just exploring various screens with and without screen recognition, and eventually the right option presented itself. It's very simple from there on, because all you have to do is go onto the app, tap activity, tap on fetch new data, click the PitPat, and it fetches the latest data. And you can then take a look at some of the screens in the app. Setting up the app itself is fairly simple. They take you through all steps. First of all, they register your account, and then you give the information about your dog. I've not found anything particularly inaccessible there. Again, sometimes I had to toggle screen recognition on, but it wasn't something I had to do all the time. So it's worth keeping in mind that in certain sections of the app, screen recognition might help you more. In the summary screen, I didn't find it overly that helpful, unfortunately. But in some screens, it does help. So yes, that is PitPat. Let us know what you think. And would you use it? Or do you have something else that you use to track your dog's fitness? Do let us know. We would love to hear it. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
And that's just about it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for your company. We really appreciate you being with us. If you've got any comments or anything you want to share, or you've got a question that we might be able to help out with, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need. We'll be back with you same time next week. But in the meantime, from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next week.